time for the In the Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, this is Damian Lemon.
This is Ali Muhammad.
And this is In the Conversation,
the podcast.
We are back again, back in the building, you know. Still in quarantine, not back in the building, but still in the building. You know, well, my side is, but, you know, we out here getting to it, living life, you know, trying to make it day by day. Sound wild, old man generic right there. But today we got a special guest in the studio, you know, on the line. We got one of our, we have our official In the Conversation political correspondent. A DC insider with high level card key clearance and one of the hosts of the Hip Politics podcast, one time for Cameron Trimble.
Woo! I'm gonna do my own woos.
There you go. Yeah, there you go.
How you guys doing?
All good.
Man.
But it's all about how you doing.
Absolutely, nigga. Are you still champagne drunk?
I did pop a bottle on that Saturday when the announcement was made. Actually, popped two. Went down to the White House and popped one, and then went to Howard to the yard and popped one.
Nice.
No, I'm good. I'm good. I just got back, had a little rest and relaxation. Closing out. I mean, we're still busy. Like, there's a lot of. Coming down off of a campaign, there's a lot of additional work you still got to do. But feeling good. I mean, we won. More importantly, America won.
No doubt.
I like that. I like that one. Just to be clear, I just want to say real quick before you jump in, Ali, just to be clear, because I didn't say it in the intro, Cameron played a pivotal role. He played a role in the Biden-Harris presidential campaign. Just to be clear, he's not just our political correspondent, not just the DC insider. This man is inside in the mix
of history.
So I just want that to be clear. Yeah, he's in the books. History maker. He's a catalyst of change. But go ahead, Muhammad.
We need to let him know who he is, but you were right on time.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I served as clarity. I served as the national director of African American paid media. So for the campaign, I was behind, I oversaw a team. So it was definitely a team effort, but I oversaw the team and my team. We were behind every paid dollar and advertising across all platforms to reach Black voters nationwide, battleground states. So that's TV, radio, digital, podcasts, print, news media, special activations, anything we were doing. From coming up with the messaging, producing the ads, working with tons of different companies and outlets and influencers to make those ads and get them placed, coming up with the strategy. It was a real collaborative effort, like eye-opening experience. But also it was another opportunity to see the breadth and depth of Black America from a different view.
Mm. Mm. Breadth and the depth.
Wow, that sounds like some bars. Yeah. Well, talk about this breadth and depth. What did you discover? What did you learn new about Black America that you may not have known?
It's not that I didn't know it, but it just, I guess you got to get reintroduced to it. Like, I think I picked up a lot of this when I went to Howard, but I mean, that was a decade plus ago Black people, you hear this all the time, we're not a monolith, and we really aren't. Like, when you start talking about what the issues are and how you talk to somebody, say, in North Carolina versus how you talk to somebody in Georgia versus how you talk to the Black people in Iowa, so many things going on in Minnesota. But then there's also that, and then you when you start talking about Florida, you got a intense Caribbean American community, you got a rich and developed Haitian American community. They need to be talked to specifically, and the messages and the issues that specific to them. It was just a lot of nuance. And then just because you're talking to I mean, I went to college, graduated from college, and have dealt in maybe a professional world. I mean, you need to talk to blue collar workers. You need to talk to frontline workers. You need to talk to people who are unemployed, people educated, not educated, people who just re-enfranchised, got out of jail. You got to talk to the young people. You got to talk to women. Got to talk to men, older men. Like, different people had different issues, even though we all dealing with similar, some similar issues, but. And then also the platforms that they, where they actually go get that information. So there's just, there's a lot that you got to, I got to learn about Black America, whether it be from focus groups, talking to people, when you put stuff out there and see how people react to it, see what messages stick, which ones didn't. Like, it was a constant everyday, like multiple times a day learning experience, to constantly tweak. Tweak it to get to make sure the right messages are getting to the right people.
Right. That's interesting. So let me ask you this. Sounds like there's a lot of listening, right? You had to really pay attention because you said there's, it's not a monolith. There's a lot of nuance in the audience. How, especially in the era of COVID where you really couldn't be out, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies and things of that nature, how did you discern these differences? And how did you adjust in real time? Like, what type of tools were you using? Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, what was somewhat of the process?
There's a lot of ways when you do, like, campaigns in general. I mean, you there, people do polling. There's constant polling, internal, external polling, as, whether that be on the phone. Sometimes you're doing online focus groups, digital focus groups. You'd be surprised, like, the ecosystem and economy around campaigning and all the all the ways you need to campaign, i.e. how do you reach voters, how do you talk to voters, how do you hear from them, how do you test messages, it's a pretty sophisticated and developed, like, business ecosystem. So you can tap into a lot of different organizations, companies, and then just tried and true tactics. I would say some of the biggest things we did was we really listened to a ton of people on the ground. When I say coalitions, we had an amazing coalitions department, ran by a Black woman, Ashley Allison, who's a veteran of the Obama White House. And so she oversaw everything. When I say coalitions, it might be the religious coalitions, the African-American coalitions, the AAPI coalitions, the indigenous people, but it also could be rural workers, farmers, labor unions, various different, like, groups, and then under each of those big umbrellas, then, like I said, say with the African-American community, you're talking to the NAACP and Urban League, but then you're also talking to local community organizations in Michigan or Minnesota, talking to the celebrities that want to be politically engaged, but then also some of the advocacy and social justice advocates, and just kind of pulling from a lot of different places. In those meetings, I mean, they're all, it's all digital. So it's all, I mean, if I look back at my calendar and was like amazed that I even got work done when you're literally in meetings all day in Zoom meetings, but you got to my job was a lot of listening and then kind of turning that, taking that information from, you get from the ground and from the streets, coupled that with what you get from your data, your analytics, and then filter all that through the campaign's lens of, like, where our principles are, what our policies are, where does President-elect Biden and Senator Harris and VP-elect Harris, where they stand and where their issues, because ultimately it's about listening to the voters and the people, taking that information, saying, hey, this is what they want to hear, this is the things they need changed, how do we communicate the things that we, our policies that we plan to implement, how do we then bridge that gap and communicate, hey, we heard this issue, we've adapted that into official policy, this is how it goes. In addition to fighting disinformation, in addition to just getting people energized around voting, I mean, this was probably by far the most unique campaign that'll ever be run in a presidential election because of COVID, because of Zoom, because of quarantine. We like to describe it, it was pretty much like a 90-95% virtual campaign, which just never happens. So it was a lot of listening because there was a lot more responsibility on our department to do stuff that normally would have been done when you got people in the streets knocking on doors, having house parties, having rallies and large events, fundraisers on the ground. So you got to do a lot more listening in a different way than you would normally been just kind of like beating the streets and being out there with the people.
Word up.
That's dope.
So you said this was a win for the American people. Exactly. For sure. Why do you feel that way?
I have no grand illusions about like where we are with a lot of different things as a black man in America.
Mm-hmm.
But the democracy and the system that we did have, and then the hope, like I'm one of those people who's kind of bought into, and I buy into because I've seen it in real life for my life and others that like things can continually get better. And that whole concept of make America great again. It's like, I feel like we're the greatest we ever were, like today, or maybe 3 years, 3.5, 4 years ago before Trump got elected. Because everything that we're doing is constantly, we're constantly working to get better. And just seeing from inside and outside, just how we were being torn apart, like, the polarizing nature of the last president, all this race, like the racial tensions that have been inflamed. I mean, look where we are in COVID. Like, it's just an utter disaster when he admittedly knows how bad it was, and his natural instinct to lie to make things be positive from jump and just never course correct it.
Right.
At no point did he like, hey, you know what? Yeah, let's at least just wear the mask. Like, I'm joking on Joe Biden wearing masks up to about a week before I catch COVID myself. Things of that nature. Like, America, like, it shows you how much the leadership matters and how much the president actually does matter.
Because
sometimes a lot of people you hear, especially in the black community, you hear like, well, the president doesn't necessarily affect my everyday life. I'm getting money under Obama. I'm getting money under Trump. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many or I was messed up under Obama, or I was messed up under Bush, and I'm messed up under Trump. Like, there's, right. A lot of people don't see it, but when you see, just look at where some of the spikes were in COVID, especially over into the summer and more recently, they're in places that Trump, that were usually led by Republicans and Republican leadership that were mirroring Trump's, like, downplaying of the virus. Next thing you know, spikes are on the rise higher than any place else. That kind of blatant leadership, like, and that misinformation of what are the rules on going back to school versus what are not the rules, what the White House is saying, what the CDC is saying, who's getting fired, who's getting let go left and right, all the different things. Like, I'm not a national security buff, but look, all the different firings and places in precarious positions he's put us in around the world, our different treaties, like just so many different things that the average person is not spending all day thinking about, but it affects you when you start talking about taxes and tariffs on Chinese imports, when you start talking about the global climate effect and like just having cleaner air. I mean, some of the things that I could go on and on about all the different things that he and his administration repealed that were just meant to help people. And it might not have been marketed, or everybody doesn't get all that information, because I mean, people got lives, and I granted 99% of people are not as in tune to the daily machinations of politics that I am. But when you see real effects constantly, even with some of our ads and the work we did, a lot of our strategy was getting real people stories, like real black people stories from around the country. And seeing some of those like workers who, thank God we had the Affordable Care Act, otherwise my daughter wouldn't have got her cancer treatment. Like different things we were doing, or how COVID affected certain businesses and black businesses that won't come back. And just kind of seeing how that lack of leadership like was having a real impact, real world impact on people. I mean, the fact that we can't even go around like freely around the world right now because of COVID, like America, our American passport kind of tells people like, hey, y'all might have it. You need to stay over there. Like, it's supposed to be the best passport in the game. And it's like, it's probably the most restrictive right now.
Right.
It's crazy.
But things like that leadership from the top and just who he puts in charge, what you say every day, talking about can you inject bleach or put sunlight into your body? And then the next day, CDC gets hundreds, if not thousands, of calls about injecting bleach. Like, it's just stuff like that that flare up. That are probably the most obvious examples. But it's like, if it's better to at least, even if you don't agree with, you might not have voted for or like every policy, it's like you've got to be honest with yourself and admit, it's like, do you like living in this? I don't think people like living in this day by day. Like, I have no idea what's about to be said or done. And on fact of that, people are dying and getting sick around me. And you guys knew about it and didn't do anything or aren't doing anything, all the proper protocols to mitigate the situation. Like, I think America won.
Yeah, fair enough. I hear that. So let me ask you though, with that said, right, particularly COVID, right? That's a pandemic. Obviously Trump should have acted sooner. Definitely should have listened to science probably a little bit more intently, you know, maybe put his ego to the side or whatever. But what do you feel like now with this new administration, like outside of those two things, like what could y'all do to kind of tackle that as an issue?
I think it's you said outside of listening to science, which is I wouldn't want to diminish how small of a thing that is.
Right.
In terms of getting things on track, is like, all right, let's lead with science. Let's lead with, if they're telling us the mass social distancing, reduced gatherings, maybe a few more restrictions for even just this period of time that we're going in right now with flu season jumping up. I mean, that in and of itself could save hundreds of thousands of lives, or at least tens of thousands of lives. I've seen different quotes and different reporting on, if there was a mask mandate from the beginning, how many more people's lives would have been saved. So I wouldn't undersell just leading with science and letting that take its course, in addition to making sure all the, like I said, I don't want to overspeak on everything, because I'm definitely not on the COVID transition team or advisory team or anything of that nature, and I don't speak. Mm-hmm. To be clear, I'm now that I'm just a citizen, I'm not speaking on behalf of the campaign. I got to say that for sure.
But gotcha.
Just as seeing my perception of it is that we as a country, having that clear leadership and that federal support for states and for local communities, being able just to use all the levers of the government to do like what's best, what's going to get us out of this, like whether it be treatments, vaccines, like I said, the mask mandate and social distancing, maybe need to be more, hold on certain different restrictions and phases a little longer. So we don't have a bunch of mass gatherings. So we can, like, as they say, flatten the curve. But when you're just not getting that. I mean, some people are still calling it a hoax in certain circles of like the right wing media and a lot of other places, or saying it's being overblown. I mean, one of Trump's biggest lines was that you're not going to hear about COVID on November 5th or November 4th, the day after the election. Like, it's just going to go away. Like, it's a hoax. It's being played up. All you guys talk about is COVID, COVID, COVID. It's like, yeah, well, 100,000 people a day are getting it. Thousands of people. I mean, we're over 200,000+ people dying and more projected to die. Like, yeah, it's a national story. So,
as the Hoteps call it, the plandemic. that's the Hotep buzzword. I don't know if y'all heard that one out there, but that's been out there. Oh, shit. Yeah, man. It's serious. It's serious, man. Just a little lighter, since we, you know, didn't get too heavy. Were you
just a little lighter?
Were you, you just a little right lighter? Let's just transition. Yeah, right. Let's transition over COVID. Were you behind Kamala Harris doing sneaker shopping?
So I'll say this: this is a team effort.
Okay.
Nah, I can't take the credit for that. I mean,
okay.
We worked with Complex a lot. Like my team and directly worked with Complex a lot. Like we did some homepage takeovers with Complex on complex.com, and they were great. Mm-hmm. They were great. People to work with and to do advertising and work with and do some really creative things that we did. The sneaker shopping, there is we definitely had a couple people on the campaign. One, I'm thinking of one person in particular, one of our cultural attachés. Like he worked in government, worked in the White House for Obama before, but it's just when I say plugged upon plugged, he's super plugged, and so we brought a lot of heavy hitters from a lot of different industries that came together on the official side to work, in addition to, and then being able to use all of our resources and our connections and knowledge and ways to leverage that. So the sneaker shopping thing, I'm so glad it happened. I'm so glad it happened when it did happen. I do know I'm glad that one got over the finish line. I'll say that. I can't go into them, but there's some stories behind that, but it was just a natural fit. The moment she stepped off with the Chucks and then the Tims, and then how crazy that went with probably like, because I'm a sneakerhead myself. You know what I mean, 40, 50 pair of Jordans. Like I'm one of those. I've waited in line as an adult once or twice. So
yeah, waiter.
I'm not a grown man line waiter anymore. I haven't waited in line. I think the Great Fives were the last time I waited in line because I just
You know what? I wasn't in line. My son was in line for those, and I had to take them. So, which you know meant I was in line too.
He was a plus one.
That was the last time I even ventured around the line to the Great Fives.
Funny.
Yeah, and then with StockX and other places that came out, like I was like, I'm working. I can pay a little more if I need to. But I mean, get what I want.
No doubt, get what I want. That's grown man shit, you know.
Yeah, but I say all that to say that, like, believe me, the sneaker shopping and finding some way to tap into the cultural relevance that she showed. We did that in a few different ways. So that sneaker shopping, I'm glad that, like I said, I'm glad that popped off and was able to come together. And we were able to highlight like a black business that was, I mean, doing stuff in the community, because it wasn't going to be, there was never going to be. And as you kind of see with a lot of different things they did, we did culturally, we always try to tie it back to different communities and highlight other businesses or highlight the American people. As opposed to just being like a quick photo op or just a quick media hit for Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. Right. So that was a big thing. But yeah, that we were able to.
Yeah, get. I thought
like we even.
Now go ahead.
No, I was gonna say like we even used like we played up her sneakers and her Tims a lot in some of our ads. Like these boots were made for voting. We did some homepage takeovers of like the YBF, Shade Room, Complex, The Source, XXL. And we played that like for certain audiences, knowing that like, hey, you guys are into this. You know, I mean, just made some cool, fun ads. Every ad wasn't super duper serious, you know what I mean? So be able to just play that up, and she got so much love. She got so much love from across a lot of different communities for that. And then once that sneaker just shopping thing dropped, it was really it was cool, like the sneakers that they used. So I was super happy about that one.
That's what's up.
Yeah, nah. I thought it was cool. I thought it was rather in step, no pun intended, to, you know, all the shit that was going on. I like that. I think they gave money to, was it Johnson C. Smith, I want to say? I believe. And then they highlighted a black designer. That was dope. I thought it was really cool. Outside of the fact that it was just a plethora of Chuck Taylors. Like, I thought it should have had a little bit more variety, but I guess she's a Chuck woman, so, but you know, it was just a plethora of the same Chuck Taylor. Outside of that, I thought the shit was, it was great. It was dope. It was very in the pocket, and speaking to your whole, like, you know, they were touching, you know, the YBFs, the shade rooms, and things like that. It was definitely targeted. It was definitely focused on the culture, so I appreciate what y'all was doing. The strategy was there.
So, after something like this, you know, you do this big campaign, you know, you work hard, you get it over the finish line, you pop the champagne. What happens
twice?
Two times. You know what I'm saying? in very strategic and historical locations. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Oh, and I got the pictures to prove it. Yeah. Definitely.
No doubt. I saw you celebrating on the Black Lives Matter block.
Yeah,
so what happens? No, go ahead.
I was saying the energy was nuts. Like, a lot of chanting, a lot of unity. I mean, I was a little nervous with COVID. You know what I mean? I double masked up, put a regular mask in, a KN95 over top, and it was kind of warm. But I still wore long sleeves and pants. I was like, I'm just trying to get out here, get a quick picture, get a quick chant or two in, feel the energy. And it wasn't, like I said, the energy was amazing. And then I'm Mr. Howard, so I had to go to Howard, and I didn't even make it there till after nightfall, and it was still a couple hundred people out on the yard, mad AKs on the AKA plot. Q's stepping at like 7:30 at night. True. Students and alumni, elderly people, you just saw people coming through.
No doubt.
It was nice.
So what happens to your life after this?
I'm trying to figure that out. Living it as we speak. I was part of something historic, no doubt. Mm-hmm. I came on the campaign later in the cycle, like right after, like after he actually locked up the nomination, and the campaign rapidly expands. Mm-hmm. But been on it for, you know, 4 months or so now. But no days off, 100 plus days, no days off, going straight, going hard, to make it happen. Obviously now there's a the way the process and what goes on now is like, there's a transition team, which for people who don't know, the transition team, if you hear that, that's a team of experts, usually a lot of volunteers, but just a team of experts from that are responsible for identifying people to fill the thousands of roles throughout the government, in every agency, every special advisory board. You're kind of combing through all the talent America has to offer, which is a pretty daunting task. So they get experts from each of those fields, that whether it be the Department of Commerce, Department of Energy, the senior administration, White House, Vice President's office, all the various departments. And then what they're doing, so there's people that work that transition team, and that process can, you start it now. We've got till till January 20th when it switches over. So that's to ensure continuity of government. There's vetting, there's just a lot that goes on, to fill that many roles and positions. So that process can take several months. I took a couple days off. I had to take a break just to like clear my mind and head and body. You know what I mean? Like, just cleanse myself for a few days, get some sleep. And then just kind of wake up. I kind of know what I want to do. I think this with the campaign really got me back. Even though I wasn't in the streets, it got me kind of back in the virtual streets of like really talking to so many different people, and some things that excited me in other times and parts of my career. Right. So, making myself available. Hopefully, we'll see if there's definitely no guarantees. I mean, it would be an honor and a blessing to be able to work in the White House or work in the agency, work somewhere in the administration. So I'd be honored if that opportunity arises. But if not, there's just plenty of opportunities. I got to shepherd the largest ever investment in Black media by a presidential campaign. I mean, we had the largest ever investment in advertising for African Americans, and then overall. So what our team was able to do, like, kind of changed and redefined and set a new standard for digital advertising, for some different creative ideas that are done, at least, at the very least, in the political campaign space, but it could expand to brands, organizations, companies. So I think that skill set is marketable. It's worth it. There's a lot of money in it. There's a lot of influence and work in it. So I'm trying to be, you only really get one chance to make your next move. So just trying to make, you know what I mean? So trying to be, I'm talking to people I need to talk to, following up on a lot of conversations that some of the people I got to meet and talk to from the campaign is still mind blowing to this day. So just trying to have, just being open to it, but I'm definitely going to stick. I love talking and dealing with Black people. That's what most of my career has been about. So it'll probably be, if it's not just focused solely on Black people, it's definitely going to be some way communicating to diverse audiences. But this opened up a few doors. So hopefully I have an announcement within a month, but I might not work for a couple of weeks. You know what I mean? Just to,
hey, no doubt. Make your next move your best move.
Third bottle of champagne. I hear that shit.
I hear this all the time. Oh, you good. I'm like, oh, probably a ton of people that want to do, oh, the world's your oyster. I'm like, where is this oyster so I can eat from it? Because it feels like I got to wake up and still make everything happen. But, I mean, I'm a Christian. I'm a God-fearing man. So I put a lot of faith in that. And, faith in the work that I did, and a lot of good work. So I'll definitely let you guys know. I'm gonna still be very politically connected, whatever it is. Keep trying to push Black people forward, whatever it is. I'm gonna stay in pocket with what I know. Not try to
wear it out.
What's up?
Wear it out.
That's what's up. I'm with that. I'm in that chorus of, I think you good. I do. I believe that. I think you gotta trust that. I know. Don't rest on the laurels, but I feel it in the spin, the air. That I think you're gonna be all right, bro.
Yeah.
I want to say this though. You know, high level politics. You're out there. You know you're moving and shaking. You're making a lot of connects, talking to people, having nuanced conversations. You know, you know what diplomacy is all about, and unity and things of that nature. So I want to know, how do you feel about this Gucci Mane Jeezy versus?
Oh, boy.
What do you think the temperature is going to be like in that room? Talk to me.
If you only knew how utterly I almost did a backflip. I can't even really flip like that when I saw it drop, because it got dropped in a group chat and I was in. I was like, dude, you lying. They already said T.I.G.Z. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, if anybody knows the history, like, I mean, real people died. Yeah. Like, it's literally not a game. And that's right up there with the Ja Rule and 50. I would probably say is the two biggest beefs. I mean, Ja Rule and 50, rest in peace, Biggie and Tupac, like, Jeezy Gucci Mane is like top three beasts of all time, easily. And these are two of my probably seven favorite rappers, period. Definitely two of my top three or four Southern rappers favorite. Like, I'm one of those Gucci Mane people who literally probably downloaded 60 or 70 of his mix, got hand on 60 or 70 of those 100 plus projects. Like, I'm too old to still be as into Gucci Mane as I am, but I still am.
I mean, Gucci really has a formula out there. Really, you know what I'm saying, really lays some groundwork and really is, you know what I mean, kind of like the father of a lot of these new cats that's out here that's running the game. So either they came up under his camp, or, you know what I'm saying, or were signed to somebody that was under his camp. So it's a lot of Gucci influence out here in these streets.
Yeah, he put a song, his first Everybody Looking at album, when he first got out of prison, when he was still on house arrest. He had a song on there called All My Children that I really mess with, where he just talked about all the rap, like just getting out of jail and seeing all his sons and his children grow up. But then for the flip side, Jeezy got me through like real points in my life. The inspiration and Thug Motivation 101 again, wasn't thugging, but it was that motivation and that inspiration. Those first two albums came out when I was in grad school, like trying to figure out if I was going to leave med school. Like, how do I deal in a more all white world coming out of Howard? And that little 25 minute drive from my house, from my apartment to school every day, Jeezy was like 70% of that. Like, Jeezy, he's just always struck me. I'm a huge, huge, huge Jeezy fan. I'm trying to save enough money to get him to perform at my 40th birthday party. Like, that's how into Jeezy I'm in. Don't know if I had that kind of bread, but. It's on my vision board of like, I'm gonna get Jeezy and Fab to perform at a birthday party of mine.
Right. I mean, I'm with D. I believe that shit. You straight. You got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think you're gonna be all right. I think you need to lock that in tonight.
That's how people diminish all of the work that has to be done in order to make that happen.
Right. Right. You good? Yeah. You good? Nah. Listen. Just make it already happen. Know that nigga. I love what people already know. I already know he gonna say yes. I already know. But let me ask you this: what's your prediction? Rounds. What's your prediction?
First of all, are they gonna be in the same room?
They better be.
I heard that they might allegedly. Be. I heard that they're supposed to take place at the Trap Museum. Now this could be false information, but that's what I heard on the Negro Net.
Nah, they should be because they are on the bill at Compound that night together. So
I heard that too.
So they should be in the building at Compound.
They got an after party together.
They got an after party at Compound in Atlanta. It's only right. which is wide open in the middle of a pandemic. Which makes it even more dangerous.
Ooh-wee.
I don't know, man. This is my prediction. I think, because they still, as much as they both like super trap legends, super rap legends, down south Atlanta gods on the hip hop tip, they still service two very different lanes. And I think Jeezy, Goo Up is like, he's like the streets, like nobody liked him. He was never mainstream. He didn't really get mainstream until maybe Wasted came out. And even then he went to jail. And so when he came out of jail, he got a lot more mainstream. And he's had some huge, like that song with him and Kodak and Bruno Mars was top hit. He's probably gotten way more mainstream in these last 4 years since he's been out than he was prior to that. But he had the streets, all those million mixtapes, like you said, all the different people he put on early. And he still has some, he had Freaky Girl, you know what I mean? He had Wasted, he had a few hits, and he still has a few hits that people know. But some of his deep cuts, I still feel like a lot of people don't know. They know, like, I Think I Love Her. They know a couple of them, and they gonna hit, like, when I Think I Love Her hit, or... yeah, like when I think a couple of those hit, they're gonna hit. But Jeezy got mixtapes that are huge, like legendary huge. He got songs that are huge, but he might arguably have one of Jay-Z's best guest verses, if not best guest verse ever on a song on Seen It All. Let alone he got Jay-Z on 3-4 songs. He was part of more big records. And then some of his trap hits, whether it's Air Force Ones, drops, or I don't know. Like a song I was bumping heavy on the campaign. I did this thing on the campaign every week to our digital staff. It was called The Benediction, where we had like an all staff call. And I would close it out every week with like, it got passed to me to close out to our staff of hundreds of people. like just some inspirational words. So I'll give them inspiration. I'll find like an inspirational quote. Then I will find, give them a tip like, hey, stay hydrated or eat your smoothies or get dressed up once a week or stuff. Like little funny things I would do. And then I would do a song of the week that like our inspirational song. And I'm unapologetic. Like my backdrop has my backdrop in my office, my Zoom backdrop. I got a picture of Barack Obama, Snoop Dogg. I got a abstract portrait of Gucci Mane, a Biden Harris, African Americans for Biden Harris, and then a real big Biggie poster and another Barack Obama picture. So it's a very mixed group. So I always let people know, like, and you can see my hip politics logo stuff. So it's like I've always led with, hey, I'm big into hip hop, big into that. And so one of Jeezy's songs I dropped on everybody that they didn't know, and a lot of people don't remember this, it's called When. It was actually off a mixtape. It came right after the Dallas Mavericks won that championship because Jason Terry's in the video with the championship trophy. But it's just, I feel like, I know that probably won't get played, but I was like, if he wants to just drop like an extra, like, look, I won, and play his win song, I don't know. Like, he got so many songs that I think will go harder. So I could see it, if you scoring it, I could see Jeezy winning like 12-8, 13-7. Because I think for everything Gucci Mane drops, Jeezy has the same type of song with the same kind of energy that was bigger and more impactful.
Well, as D always say, it's 20 songs. I'm sure Radrick can muster up 20 songs. And then see what happens with these battles is what it brings out is each artist's fans. You know what I'm saying? The people that know it. So, you know, when you read in the comments and shit like that, you know, that counts in these battles. You know what I'm saying? It's just not you sitting alone deciding this. So when he drop his shit that the Gucci fans really know or that was his hit, then they're going to represent and drop the fires and the bomb emojis and all that. So we'll see. You know what I'm saying? I don't know who gets the final tally, but usually the comments win the war.
Well, to that point, question, with the comments winning the war, ever since they went and went more mainstream, they got more money behind it, and now it's like on Apple TV, I feel like the comment section ain't the comment section no more. Ain't been that way for like a couple months. Like them Erykah Badu, Jill Scott.
That's the R&B. That's the R&B section.
Or even when you had Lil Jon and T-Pain, like those comments had me crying.
Yeah, the comments was on fire, T-Pain and Lil Jon. That was like when it was real stuff. Real pandemic. That was a pandemic vibe.
Yeah, that's probably the biggest drawback from the Apple Music elevation of it all. You know, you definitely get the presentation, you get the great sound and all of that. But yeah, I think that is the third person. I mean, I think Ali, you might have said that at the top, but I think that is the third person in the battle is that comment section. And, it's well missed because that's the barometer. That's where you see how things are impacting. The Apple Music thing is a little bit more curated. They're a little bit more positive. You know what I'm saying? They're a little bit more corporate. Yeah, I totally agree with you on that.
This the one where the comments, you kind of need to let them go crazy. Because, like,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's Jeezy fans and Gucci fans are usually not anti, like, they're a lot of the same people.
Right.
I would dare to say they're a lot of the same people. And if anything, Gucci probably has as you can see through, if one measure of current fans and impact is if it's social media. Like I don't count their pockets, but I'm pretty sure Jeezy made more money than Gucci over time.
And he's I can't tell.
I don't know. You never know.
Gucci had many artists signed to him, way too many publishing. See, that's the thing.
A lot of that stuff, Gucci, who he signed, he might not have signed everybody. He just like even when you talk about Metro Boomin and Mike Will made it and some of the producers and Zaytoven stuff. Like,
he lost a lot of money in his last book, he did say he lost a lot of money. Yeah, he said he lost a lot. I mean, due to all the legal fees and shit like that, he definitely lost a lot of money. He's coming back, But
even with Young Thug, he didn't have anything on his publishing. I think he sold that contract. So it's like with the Migos, he got. I don't think he had them under contract. He didn't have everybody under contract, but even though that they came through and were able to be put on by him, but right. Whether it's not about the money or not, I think it's more so about like I said, Jeezy had bigger hits for a longer period of time.
Now, okay.
Over Gucci more right, but Gucci is probably more in the current culture because Gucci got like 13, 14 million Instagram followers. His wife, Keisha Kiora, got millions of followers. You know what I mean? Everything he's doing now, like even though they both in their 40s, Gucci is still an active artist. Like Jeezy, I know, is about to drop his album, but he ain't been. I mean, Gucci's still putting out 3-4 projects a year. Like, mainstream, and staying with at least a small radio record on every album, and then he's jumping on Doja Cat, he's jumping on all these features. Like, he's still out here like a very active. He and 2 Chainz are in the same place, as opposed to like Jeezy kind of said he retired, was about to retire, but he ain't really been putting out big projects with big singles in a couple years.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I feel you on that 12-8. I've been hearing that 12-8. That's been a common prediction. Go ahead. What you about to say?
I'm cheating a little bit and looking up, you know what I'm saying, the discographies and shit like that. And they not that far apart. You know what I'm saying? In charted hits. Like platinum and gold selling records. Jeezy has 21 certified records that's on his discography. Gucci got about 18. So it's not that far of a difference. You know what I'm saying? Talking gold, platinum, double platinum, 6 times platinum. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it might not be as far off as we think.
No, I agree. I've been hearing that too. As far as metrics go, I think they're pretty much neck and neck. Like, as far as like top 5 hits, I think Jeezy has 1, Gucci may have 1, or Gucci has 1. Like, they're 1 and 1. I think they're 2. Yeah, they're very close. They're a lot closer than you would expect.
Right.
I think with me, this is what I'm saying as far as this shit goes. And I said this last week. More than anything, this is definitely one of those verses, as there's been a few of them. Brandy Monica was one of those as well. But this one, probably more than any of them, I'm gonna use this as my primer to Gucci Mane. Like, I know the Surface Records, and shout out to everybody that's been hitting me, putting me on the albums I should listen to and songs that I should listen to. But I feel like I'm a little removed from the Gucci Mane discography now. And, as far as Jeezy go, I seen that come up, and I was definitely impacted a lot more by those records. So I think there's my bias on that. I think Jeezy definitely has huge records, like impacting records as far as I'm concerned. But again, I think that like Gucci's impacting heavy on the cultural level too. And again, like, I can't speak to that. So it's going to be interesting because I'm curious what his 20 is going to be. I'm actually curious what both of their 20 is going to be, but obviously I got way more awareness of what Jeezy can pick from. But I'm curious because I'm going to use that as my, I'm going to be looking forward to the, you know how they do the little title playlist afterward. I'm like, let me go ahead and check some of these Gucci Mane records out. You know what I'm saying? So man, it's going to be interesting. And more than anything, I think symbolically, I think it's a big thing. I think, you know, just these two, obviously I'm sure that they've had some conversations beforehand, and if they're in the same venue, I'm sure things have been kind of, at least on a civil level, but just for the culture to see that, especially right now with all of these rappers being shot and, you know what I mean, all this beef and shit going on, like, this is one of these, this is like a goodwill tour. This is definitely a great transition move for both of them, because they are definitely elevating. They still got their trap roots and they, mm-hmm. you know, they true to it. But they, you see, they trying to pivot. You see Jeezy trying to, you know, do his talk show, his Donahue look. Mm-hmm. And Jeezy's, you know, he's out here authoring books and, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Eating good, eating Whole Foods and shit like that. You know what I mean? They both elevating.
Really so, got to deal with yeah. Gucci for real. I think, like you said, I was impacted by both of the rises, you know what I'm saying? Both of them, you know, in their early days, both of them have came across my desk in different kinds of business projects. With So Icy when they was, you know what I'm saying? He was independent with the Big Cat label. And then mm-hmm. Jeezy when he was on the mixtapes with Gangsta Grills. So, you know, you got to see them both. You know, I think out of all of it, it's like Jeezy, you know what I'm saying, probably had the most soul searching to do in order to do this because, you know what I'm saying, he lost a lot in that, in the social capital space of this beef. You know what I'm saying?
You said Jeezy or Gucci?
Jeezy. I think Jeezy lost more in the beef than Gucci because Gucci,
for real?
You know, yeah, Gucci killed his people that he sent to steal his chain. I think Gucci's rise was off of the fact that Jeezy sent those guys allegedly to rob him and shit, and two left out, you know what I'm saying, running, and one didn't leave out at all. That's like the legend of Gucci, and he made a record about it. You know what I'm saying? Which, you know, it would be interesting if he plays it. So it's kind of like, I think Jeezy's rep took a little hit in that space because it was like, damn, you send somebody to take his chain and that shit ain't work. And he killed the dude and beat the case and came back to talk about the shit. I think that was pretty harsh for Jeezy.
Yeah.
To me. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like in coming together and doing this, it probably took him a little more soul searching than Gucci. But I'm just speculating from the sideline.
Then you could add the fact that, you know, I forget who said this, but you could also add the fact that a lot of people have referred to him as the Berry Gordy of the trap. You know what I mean? If he had paperwork at all on these people, he has a long line of, as you said, his children, whereas Jeezy... He didn't fare that well. Like a lot of his people kind of, they didn't pop as of, you know what I mean? They didn't right. jump off, or they didn't pop until they left, you know what I'm saying, the Jeezy helm.
Right.
So there's also that. He's got a lot of disciples out there that speak his name and who are musically very relevant.
Right.
But go ahead, so what are you about to say, Cam?
Again, it's all speculation and stuff we've just read over the years, over the last decade plus, but I actually would right. thought it would have been harder for Gucci to get to do something like this because at the end of the day, his life was threatened.
Right.
And allegedly this person had something to do with it, like had a direct right. influence on it. And at the end of the day, it's like, I mean, I would pivot and what I would say to all of this is that it's a great example. I'm hoping all the negative stories, like you got to tell some people, because I mean, this happened, what, 10, 12, probably more than that, maybe 15 years ago. So, or something, however many years ago this happened. So it's a lot of younger people who are just now watching this and may not even fully appreciate the impact. They just might have grew up in the era of the last 5 or 10 years and like just knew that or heard that these guys had beef, but they didn't have the kind of beef where they were talking about it all the time or. Even like with Ja Rule and 50, like 50 mentioned Ja Rule in how much his beef, just in even most recently in his Breakfast Club interview yesterday, he mentions that he still don't like Ja Rule. Like he mentions the beef and is brought up in a different way all the time. So it's like you constantly are reminded why it happened. Right. It's like this one is kind of like, because there was a loss of life and it was how serious it got. It was like, you can find the information, not hard to read about it, but it's not talked about right. as much. So I just hope, but the impact of like, if these two guys can at the very least sit down and celebrate the culture,
right?
Especially if they can get in the same room, right. like hopefully with the message that sends, it can send a lot of people. But I mean, I would hope this could happen at you over 40. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. I think
married and kids and grown kids at this point. Like,
I think everybody's in a place where it's like, all right, you know what I mean? Nobody's really fighting in the streets every day right now. So I think they could, you know, get through this cordially enough, you know what I'm saying? And if it's any interesting, you know, tension and shit like that, you know, it'll be cool for entertainment, but I'm sure it won't boil over into anything stupid, you know? Everybody you think got
Gucci
a lot of
got that $1 million?
From where?
Gucci, he put out a tweet not too long ago saying that he'll go against anybody for versus somebody cut him a check for $1 million. And he's like, Gucci versus everybody. And then Jeezy went on. He had said in an interview that initially he was hit up about the verses about Gucci and that Gucci had respectfully declined. Jeezy had put that out. Yeah. But
hey, nah, I wouldn't put it past that he got a check, a bag to do it. You know what I'm saying? Definitely got a bag to go to the club. So, hey, it might be a full package for him. And it might have worked out, which makes everybody smile.
Yeah, man. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to say the least. I'll say that.
You know?
There's been a, I don't know if it's official or not, but they've seen a fly, it might be a bootleg fly of T.I. versus Wayne on December 17th.
Hmm.
What? That's terrible.
Yeah.
You say that's terrible?
Well, T.I. versus Lil Wayne?
What's wrong with that?
Lil Wayne, yes. Weezy F. Baby.
The Weezy F. Baby from New Orleans.
You think they in the same class?
Who
I guess
think,
if it's 20 records.
Out of the league? Who you think is out of the league?
I hold Lil Wayne at a higher standard than I do T.I. But I mean, T.I. is a certified legend. He's got mixtapes. He's got hits upon hits. He's got features upon features. He got street features. He got crossover stuff. Lil Wayne got literally hundreds of features. I mean, that tear he went on. I think he has way more mixtape impact than T.I.
Right.
And probably more album impact as well. But
now you're right. You are right. But again, as D Lemon always states in this versus debate, it's 20 songs. Tip got 20 songs. You know what I'm saying? Wayne has a lot to sort through. Mm-hmm. But you know, 20 songs, you can figure it out. I think that's a fair assessment. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I guess
I think it's a fair. I think on, you said what?
No, I'm sorry. I was gonna say at the end they're friends, so I think it can make sense.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I remember back in the day, at Vibe, T.I. was the one who said, "Yo, y'all should pay attention to Wayne." As far as this was when Wayne was making his change from, you know, Lil Wayne, young. You know what I'm saying? Young, I don't say kid rapper, but the youngest of the Cash Money set, mm-hmm. and kind of looked at as in a certain way. You know what I mean? Whereas, you know, T.I. was straight from the trap, and T.I. was definitely, you know, lyrically inclined from the door. I remember him saying, "Yo, you know who's killing shit right now? Wayne and these Squad Up tapes. He's going crazy." And that was like one of the first times I heard. That was like one of the first indicators of, oh, all right, maybe he's doing something. This is pre-Carter. This is pre-dedication, all of that. So it's just interesting. To your point, they fuck with each other, but it's just interesting that now they would go at each other at a versus. You know what I mean? And it's only 20 records. And maybe if we got to consider, you know, well, first of all, I heard a lot of these things. The only shit that you could really play is stuff on the DSPs, even though I think a lot of Wayne stuff is on DSP, a lot of the stuff that's most relevant. But if you got so much shit, it might be harder to select a mean 20 than it is for somebody that may not have as expansive a catalog. They both have legendary catalogs. But like you said, Wayne got a lot of shit to sort through.
Yeah,
culturally, Wayne was in a photo with Trump, which kind of, you know, I mean, hopefully that should have blow over by then, but you know.
Lil Wayne too stamped. He's too stamped to, for that. I mean, it's not the greatest, but it's.
Yeah.
I had to pause. I paused streaming his stuff because I probably listen to Lil Wayne every day, or a song or a feature. He and Jay-Z are my two favorite artists. Period.
Mm. Okay.
And they find their ways. Whether it be a feature or a song, album or something, they find their way into my life probably most days. But I feel like the Lil Wayne thing, if you're right, 20 records, what I'd be curious about that is that how many of his own songs does he lean on, or does Lil Wayne, and T.I. could do it too, but Lil Wayne for sure, does he go into his feature bag? Because I would dare to say, like, he could just do 20 songs he featured on that would kill. And not touch a single one of his songs.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I just went through the discography. And what? Shit, I got this short in my cord. I don't know what's going on. But anyway, I went through the discography. And Wayne got damn near 90 songs that has charted platinum or gold.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? T.I. probably has about 20-something, 30.
Damn.
So, again, there's a lot to sort through for Wayne, but he can sort now.
Yeah, he got a lot to sort from. Hell yeah. I just wanted to touch on, especially you was talking about features, I just wanted to touch on one thing. So you feel, and this is not, I don't think this is an uncommon belief, but you feel that you said that Jeezy may have one of Jay's best features, and you said, "See, I seen it all." You think that's a better feature than Go Crazy?
Definitely.
Really? Okay, I'm gonna have to go back and listen.
And I'm well prepared to defend that. Definitely.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. Seen It All is probably one of my favorite songs in rap, in the modern era of rap. It's probably the most, it was a vulnerable voice. I mean, not vulnerable, but Jay-Z went into deeper into the story than he had ever went. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
He named names. He named places. You know what I'm saying? He dropped all the birds. He named addresses in front of 560 State. You know, it's as far as his dope boy rap, that was as deep as he had went.
Mm. All right. I'm going to go back and listen to I Seen It All. I heard it briefly recently, but shit, Go Crazy was so fire. Plus that beat is bananas.
Go Crazy was bananas. Big.
Shout out to Cannon.
Yeah. I think the people probably would go with Go Crazy, but my personal preference, Seen It All is probably, it's like I said, one of my favorite joints.
Mm-hmm. Ali, I'm right there with you. I listen to Seen It. If you look, I'm literally looking right now at my title, most listening to in October. Seen It All is 12th. Like, I'm still listening to that song that regularly. And I would say two things about reason why. Like, one, we got to respect that Jeezy got three classic Jay-Z verses. Because then, in between that is I Do with Andre 3000. So it's like, he has some of Jay-Z's best feature work ever. But Seen It All, to your point, like, yeah, I think Jay-Z gets deeper. I remember when it came out, you could probably still find some interviews where Jeezy was talking about how he got Seen It All the record. He said Jay-Z mentioned to him that he cried on it. Like, it made him like shed a tear. It made Jay-Z shed a tear when he recorded it. And he was like, that was a story I remember Jeezy sharing. Like, it was that personal to Jay-Z.
And that's crazy, because I took back what I said that it was vulnerable, because it sounded vulnerable, but he wasn't really vulnerable to his personal thing. But I guess that story was personal to him if he cried about it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what comes through to me. When I work out, not that I work out every day or no shit.
Talk to him.
But when I work out, I'm playing Seen It All is my own repeat track.
No, I feel it.
It's a great come up story.
And then that Jeezy, that might be one of Jeezy's hardest lines. Threw him on the table, said.
I like that.
Threw him on the table, said, F that. young nigga get paid. Like, that joint.
Yeah.
That line is so powerful.
Yeah.
But another line in that record that it's not impactful or anything like that, but it's just so, it's like honest. It was like an honest line. It's like a line from the hood. Like, sometimes you might be a big time dope boy, but you still got flaws and shit. And the hood know your flaws, but they say fuck it. You know what I'm saying? Because you getting money. And then when he says, you know, he came through in the big 745, but everybody back because that nigga can't drive. That's some funny shit to say about yourself.
right.
You know what I'm saying? As you high signing and showing out, but you can't even really drive. Like, this little young nigga can't even drive that shit.
About to crash this shit up. Look,
that's funny. I hope you play that song.
Definitely go ahead and listen to that. Let me get your three favorite Gucci joints. If you had to pick your three favorite Gucci's and your three favorite Jeezy's.
All right, my Gucci joints are way more ratchet than my Jeezy joints because they have very little redeeming value other than they just get me hype. it's a newer song that he's dropped in the last couple years since he's been out that, for whatever reason, this is just my ratchet favorite. It's called Stutter. Look it up. It's just a song. Mm-hmm. The beat go net crazy. It's a song. No redeeming value, but that joint goes hard. So it's a song called Stutter by Gucci that I really like. Photo Shoot. Because Photo Shoot came out in a time when I think I was in my early 20s, and I was way more active, like, clubbing and dancing and partying. And I just remember when that song came on, like, cats were just, you know what I mean? You remember when dance floors still used to exist and people like, oh, I'm about to act like I'm doing a photo shoot. We just doing the most when that song came on. And I remember that song was really big. And I think I still bump that. And then a real... Because I'm going off the top of the head. I'm just thinking about the Gucci I listen to now. Another good song is called I'm Proud of You. And it was he might have dropped that only a year or two ago. But Guap is just like, Guap, I'm so proud of you. Look that up. He got a video for it too, standing on two Rolls Royces. But it's the reason why that song connected, because as I was, you know what I mean, just as I'm growing as a person and lifestyle changes and trying to upgrade and elevate, I took that and seeing, like, you know, the Gucci glow up is like, oh, this is a good song that it just translated to what I was going to and feeling through in my life. And like I said, it's a newer joint, but I still think Gucci got, and I think Gucci as a rapper is no question. Gucci is a better technical rapper than Jeezy. And Gucci, and I think a lot of people sleep on Gucci, like his metaphors, his analogies, his similes, like his double entendres, triple entendres, like he shows how much smarter he is than you might think. It's like some of his references, sports references, like he's not Lil Wayne level, but he's up there in the sense of, like, you look at the outside and you don't realize how complex his mind can actually be. Like, Gucci can rap. Jeezy would have to be Bang off of the first one with him, T.I., and Lil Scrappy. I don't know why, that song goes super hard for me, and that's in my workout mix. Seen It All and Me Okay. And then it's a close, there's another song that's like, when I'm feeling myself that I still play that, I wish it got, I don't know if he can play it because it doesn't have a DSP because it was on a mixtape. But it's featuring, it's called Flexin', featuring Fab and Yo Gotti. But if you want like a song to make, like when you're driving around in that new, the Merlot, put that, try to find that Flexin' song. Like the beat is super hard, bass is not crazy, and it's a straight like stunning joint. So I really like that. I don't hear it as much because I gotta go on that Piff and like download it, and you can't just have it in my normal playlist, so it's harder for me to hear it as much as I probably would want to, but I like flexing. Right. But if it's songs that we might hear, I would definitely say it's Bang, Me Okay, and Seen It All.
Yeah, yeah.
Niggas respecting Merlot out there. Look at that.
Merlot need his own Instagram.
Yeah.
Hey, you never know. I guarantee you probably find followers for it.
True indeed. True indeed.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to break down those three like that. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of Gucci shits, I don't even know the names for real, for real. You know what I'm saying? I just, like, I could put Gucci shit on and let it fly because I know which territory I'm in. You know what I'm saying? It's like taking a walk through the hood. But I do have, I like Gucci. I like the song called All About the Money off of the Radrick versus whatever song album.
Oh, yeah. All State About versus the Money. Roger Davis. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. State versus Radrick Davis. All About the Money with Rick Ross. And then I like Freaky Girl because I like that he sampled that Joy record lick. You know what I'm saying? Because Joy dropped this album that, you know what I'm saying, was fire. But I don't know how it got caught up in the mix. It didn't hit as big. I don't know if the distribution was off or the deal was crazy. But she dropped a fire album at a time when, you know what I'm saying, a lot of, you know, neo-soul shit was popping, but her shit wasn't neo-soul. It was kind of hard. Her shit was more hard and hip-hop than a lot of the neo-soul stuff. And Freaky Girl, I mean, the lick song on that album was dope. And then he sampled that for Freaky Girl, which, you know what I'm saying, it's getting shine now with Mulatto. So those two records, plus, you know, all of the other shit put together, you know, you could take that as my third. You know what I'm
saying? Real quick question on that. How do you feel, like, is Freaky Girl old enough to already be repackaged and sampled?
Yeah, because if you repackage it with a female rapper that's new and busting on the scene, and you take one of Gucci's I'm gonna edit that out, y'all. One of Gucci's classic records, and you put it on a new artist, I think that was a nice flex.
Yeah. Saweetie been doing that too with that Too Short song. Like, I was like, I feel like that song is still active.
She get her Diddy on.
Yeah,
I ain't
gonna
lie. I like Saweetie though. I like both of them. I like Big Lotto and Saweetie.
Big Lotto. But,
yeah, it's funny. I mean, that shit is 15 years old.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's a whole nother generation.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
So, you know, Jeezy, of course, I said Seen It All is one of my favorite joints. Off the first mixtape, Getting Money Over Here with Bun B. That was my shit. That's what put me on to Jeezy. You know what I'm saying? I'm just a young ghetto nigga with a big ass chain. That was my shit.
Nah. That's the shit. That was hard. Is that the one? Let me think what I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We pulled up. I remember he had the drop top Benz pulled up at the club. Mm-hmm. I remember that joint. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know what I'm saying, he got a lot of others. Like Go Crazy. I like Go Crazy. That's one of the songs I like. You know what I'm saying? So Play the Young Jeezy, I'm a Dope Boys, Go Crazy.
I think, if I had to take, I'd say Go Crazy, with Hov. I think that shit is crazy. I like And Then What? I'm not gonna lie. I like Manny's intro. You know what I mean? I like the claps on that shit.
I was trying to figure the name of that song, but I was getting in my mind, I was getting it confused with Go DJ, that's my DJ, but it was just Manny Fresh with putting that together. Go ahead though.
I gotta hear it again, but I think I'm a big fan of I Love It, which was one of my joints.
I love it.
But I'll say and I love it. I like that shit. But I'll say this, one of my favorite records, and I guess it's not a solo shit, but Them Boys, If it's taking too long to break, yeah, to lock, bring it back.
Yeah.
You were sure anyway, so bring a stack. That shit is hard.
That song
nigga.
Did so much for Jeezy's like legend. Yeah. And like, it came out at like the perfect time. He had the perfect line. He was in the first verse. Like, that song was so strategic for Jeezy. Like, time, like that was an example of like perfect time and place. What? He
what was the name of that song?
Off for that. Them Boys.
Them Boys. That was his was his Beyonce moment. Yeah. He was out of there, nigga. it was not in the group no more.
It was a Boys in the Hood record.
Yeah. It was a Boys in the Hood record. Yeah, that fucking
it was
their
only
was so
record.
Crazy.
Really.
Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Nah, that's what's
man.
Up.
Anyway. you said what?
No, I said it is their only record. I'm also curious if they are in the same room, like, because if you saw the Instagram captions, they was taking little pot shots, like calling them Lil Snow Cone and Lil Goo Wop. I was like, I wonder if it's gonna get petty like that in the room. Which, if it stays just in the room and there's jokes, I love it. But
I think it's gonna have the boxing match weigh in. Level of petty and taunt, and I think that again, I think they're grown enough to see the big picture. I think there's gonna be enough police on the scene to where shit ain't gonna get too out of hand. You know what I mean? But I think they both gonna talk a little bit of their shit. It's gonna be good to see though. It's gonna be something. It's definitely compelling as fuck. You know what I mean? I will say that it is. You know, shit. We will definitely. Be definitely tuned all the way into that bitch. Cam, anything else you want to speak on before we get up out of here? And actually, let me ask you this. What are you fucking with culturally and even entertainment-wise before we jet? Let us know what you watch. What's one of the best things you watched? What was one of your best moments from this campaign, and then whatever else you want to go with?
Haven't been watching a ton of stuff lately due to the all-encompassing nature of the job, but just little clips here and there. I've been loving like the SNL coming back with I like the Chris Rock, the Chappelle, Bill Burr. I'm a big stand-up comedy guy, so just seeing them, that was cool. I'm on The Mandalorian right now, watching that, catching up to the Mandalorian. Can't get into Power. I don't know why. I'm on the third episode, and it just don't feel the same. So maybe I'm gonna try to give. I'm trying to get a new Power, another go round. The last few days, actually, I've been catching up on a lot of stuff. Like this last week, I watched that Sneakerheads show with King Batch. I don't know if y'all seen that on Netflix.
I got it in the queue. I haven't checked it out yet. I've heard it's some people right. picking it apart, it's but right. I definitely want to check it out. Yeah. I heard. They got my homie, though. My homie, what's his name? I forget his name, but you know him. He's on Last OG.
Yeah. I forget his name. He's an actor you remember.
Yeah, I fuck with him, too.
Yeah. But yeah, they did have some like cool sneakers in there. But so I've just been watching Love. The only thing I think I caught up with in the last few months for real was Lovecraft Country. Like, I think I need to sit down and watch that joint again. Like, that was deep, entertaining. Yeah. I really, really, I can't believe that got on TV. Like, I don't know. I haven't done a ton of pitch meetings, but I've been a part and seen how that goes. Like, I do not understand how that was pitched and who heard it and was like, you know what? That's going to make, that makes sense. Let's go ahead and put $100 million into that. 50 million
that author has a big fan base. The guy Lovecraft, he has a big, it's a whole culture of people who are fans of Lovecraft. So you know, saying that probably you know helped, and it was a, you know, they mixed it off of one of the most popular books from his fan base group. Because When he wrote that stuff, he wrote it open source, so everybody can build on it and add to it, and so that's how it got very popular. And so, you know, I guess we know when they went to pitch that, they probably pitched that it's a fervent audience for this type of content.
Interesting. Curious how they ranked all that in, like with open source, like where would it all reside? You know what I mean? Like where do the people get to read what was been added to? And
I mean, he was like in the 50s or some shit. He was like way back in the day. So, you know, I guess there's many books. I think this particular show was based off of one of the books.
Okay.
That were done in his genre of stuff.
So they're coming back with another. Yeah. They're coming back with another season, probably.
We'll see. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if they just won and done it. Right. You know what I mean? But Alan Maldonado is the cat's name. No. Kid from Sneakerheads and plays Bobby on Last OG.
Okay.
But I don't think Ali, you've checked it out yet. Have you seen Fargo at all, Cam?
I've watched the first season. This new season, because you've been talking about it, I'm finishing up the second. I actually started the second episode today, because I know you've been championing that, and I'm a huge Chris Rock fan.
Yeah,
and it's so funny that you bring that up. I'm all caught up. I'm waiting on the finale, dog.
Ooh, okay. Well, shit. Well, hold on. That's gonna be for next week. We're gonna chop it all the way up
because
that means I gotta watch more this week.
Finish Game of Thrones, so I want to have that talk as well.
Yeah, because I just started with season four and went in, and I finished it this weekend. I watched it all this weekend.
Dope. Yeah. What you about to say, Cam?
No, I said that means if I'm gonna listen to the podcast, I guess I gotta catch up this week. Y'all have definitely spoiled one or two shows. Like, dang, man.
We ain't gonna get to that yet. If you hear a start, you might as well fast forward.
Right. Yeah.
That's why
we're mindful about that.
A couple of y'all Power Book Twos, I had to like just stop the episode and fast forward because I was like, I still kind of want to watch this.
Shit.
I
know for sure we lost at least one listener. It's the responsible thing to do.
Keep fast forward.
Yeah.
But before we get out of here, though, you being a Howard person, I came across from my homeboy B Moore sent me a link to a web series called The Taste of the Mecca.
I haven't seen that one.
It's about. So it's new. He found it in Afrotech. At Afrotech, they were screening it in one of the rooms, and he found it. He sent it to me. I'll send it to you. But it's called Taste of the Mecca. It's based around some Howard students. They calling it, you know, in the show, the school is called Mecca, the Mecca, whatever. So, but that's the Howard's nickname. So it all works, and it's all shot on Howard's campus. So, you know, I think you might, see some of yourself.
I'm gonna check that out. Before I get out here, just definitely one thing that I wanted to bring up, in that making sure this story is told as far and wide as possible, because it's true to what I know I came into the campaign with, and like what it just kind of showed the level of investment of the kind of leader that people just voted for. Like it was a source of pride that we were able to literally, like I said, invest millions of dollars into black owned media. And by invest, I mean like be able to advertise with podcasts, digital media companies, big TV companies, radio, independent radio, and not just the sites that are owned by bigger conglomerations or bigger corporate entities, but like really on the ground, community based, or even if they've gotten bigger in regional, national, but still black owned media companies, black newspapers around the country. Like that's a big deal in this space because of how much money is spent in political advertisements as presidential elections just get more and more expensive. And just more billions and more. I mean, now it's into the billions of dollars that are spent. And that's just a huge economic driver, especially in a year this tough where media across the board has been hit so hard. And so for us to, like I said, I can't take credit for it. Like I said, it's a leadership decision that I just helped to execute on. But the kind of investment that was made to have those authentic conversations, to be able to put a few dollars to a lot of dollars. But, and it's also not just, it wasn't charity. It's, this is where viewers and voters are in this right. various landscape, and how people get their information just looks different from 4 years ago, or if you want to go back to the Obama years, 12 years ago. Right. So be able to identify that, like, that was a real source of pride. Me coming, having been a member of NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists, and my work with in the like minority communication space, that was just a big sense of pride. And so I was just really happy, and it gives me hope on where we're going and what future cycles will look like. So it's like, hey, we set a blueprint that, like, hey, if you want to reach Black voters, this is the kind of places you do need to go. These are the kind of companies and people you do need to work with and put your advertising on, rather than just, well, let me just run to a couple national TV and places and leave it at that. And then the other huge thing that I was super, I mean, I know the 50 Cent tweet and the Lil Wayne tweet picture got a lot of the pub in the last, kind of desperate pub in the last couple of days, but our ability to integrate, work with, listen to, and work with the hip-hop community, some of the hip-hop legends, to current active artists, but then just the culture, and tap into the culture as a whole, was huge. I mean, huge. Like, I'm a huge battle rap fan, and it was, I mean, this is a career achievement for me. Like, we were able to work with the Ultimate Rap League and Smack and Beasley over there, who run, I mean, which is like a cultural staple, run battle rap. But we're trying to reach young Black men or men of color who are not, you mean, may not be registered, just might not be checking for politics, might not be thinking either candidate is for them. So for us to be able to, like, partner with them and then get Charlie Clips and DNA just to do that battle, like, to do that kind of clean rap on the importance of voting and some of our issues, to be able to work with them to do that was, like, I just thought was so cool. And it was authentic. It was nothing that was pandering. It was nothing that, like, I mean, this is just where people are. You got to give messages to and use messengers that people know and trust. And everything from working with Young Jeezy, Jermaine Dupri, Ludacris, Monica to do radio ads, Mary J. Blige, like, crazy story how we got her. But for her to end up being able to do a I Will Vote ad and then do something specifically for the state of North Carolina to get them to come out. My man who helped us put together the Snoop thing, like, sneaker shopping, like, so many different things that are in and of the culture for us. Like, we worked with Chuck Kriegmer over at the founder of allhiphop.com to sponsor some of our live events, like one of our Zoom events and stuff for Shop Talk. Like, just on, and then you had the two chains, the Common Sense, Offset performing at different venues, and Megan Thee Stallion tweeting out the Senator Harris, and us being on the BET Hip Hop Awards, like with the Senator Harris being, like, given, like, with all our Howard stuff in the background, being able to give kind of a special message and introduce one of the awards on the BET Hip Hop Awards, for us to make a song with Cosign that was on the VMAs, like, Everybody Vote. I mean, this dude who co-produced, like, Anacondas from The Interns, like, huge hip hop producer, and he got a show on Fox Soul. But for him to make an original song and be able to just be a part of that at every level was, like, it really showed me, like, the power, even if it might not have been on Front Street, like, the power and the breadth and, like, the impact that, like, the hip hop community, us, like, work. I can't thank the Source enough, Londell McMillan, the owner of the Source, and his whole team for us to working with us and be able to do a media partnership with them and just, like, have conversations, advertising, original content. They had a ticker countdown, voting ticker. So even if it wasn't just about the campaign, it was about making sure for me, it was about making sure black people voted and understood the importance of this vote and understood the importance of the election. But as a unabashed child of hip hop and hip politics, like, that's kind of what I am and what I do, be able to bring a lot of that cultural relevancy and be able to have those authentic conversations, I think was, to me, was something that I highlighted and I'm going to live with forever. And hopefully some of these connections and some of the people I've gotten to talk to and interact with and work with can continue. But even if they don't, just these last 120 whatever some odd days that I was on, to be able to have that kind of impact with and work with the hip hop community on something this big was huge. So I was like, definitely want to give some shout outs to like our team. We had a black owned, completely black creative team that did all of our, most of our creative, black owned media buying firm that we worked with. Like, it was a lot of black input from top to bottom. And so just to be able to see and work with that to kind of reach and then get the kind of turnout we did was something for the history books.
Heard up.
That's what's up, man. And again, as I say, the chorus, I believe it. You good. I'm trying to tell you, dog. Yeah, you touched a lot of people, man. And yeah, man, your efforts were greatly appreciated and obviously proved to be very effective, man. And I'm sure the future is bright than a motherfucker. You know, thanks for being on this episode. Thanks for being in the conversation, official political correspondent out there.
I appreciate thanks that. Can I put that on the resume?
This way too.
Absolutely. Oh yeah, absolutely. Please do. Please do. Yeah. Thank you for that ad buy. It was greatly appreciated.
No, man, you guys are impacting the culture. Y'all keeping people in the conversation. It's like I said, I've been a fan for years, but I mean, you guys have some of the best conversations on the interwebs out there. So that's only right.
We appreciate that, man. Thank you very much. Ali, you got anything to say important before we get out of here?
Man, I'd like to thank Cam for being here. Thanks for the work you put in. Of course, like we just said, thanks for the ad. You know what I'm saying? It'll help support these shows that we put out. You know what I'm saying? For the people who come here every week, and thank them for keeping the conversation alive, because without them, who are we talking to?
I hear that shit. That's real. So tell a friend to tell a friend.
And even the enemy.
To get in the conversation. We out.